Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the UConn Hockey Podcast. I'm joined here by my good friend Kevin here again today. I'm just going to consider you a co-host now, not a guest co-host anymore, if that's okay with you. But thanks for joining me again today. How's everything going?
Of course, man. I appreciate you having me on again. Love being here. It's going well. It's good. Love talking ice, boss. I wish I was in a better mood about the team, but I guess we'll have plenty of time to get to that.
Yeah, let's sort of just dive into the latest weekend at UNH, and it was kind of a disaster of a weekend, to say the least. UConn loses in regulation on Friday, and then they lose in overtime on Saturday's game. What was your just overall thoughts on the weekend before we just dive into the little details of what happened?
Just disappointing, right? I mean, you knew UNH was kind of hot coming in, and both games were on the road, and, you know, the Wits, you know, a tougher place to play. It doesn't have the Olympic ice. They shrank it a little bit. It wasn't the intensity that I want to see. I think that was the biggest thing. Like, you know, like we'll get, like you said, into the nitty gritty, what went wrong. But like, especially in the second game, you know, it's like, all right, you know, Friday night or whatever it was, didn't go our way. Like, I want to see that pop Saturday. And for a little bit we did, but not as dominant as I thought we should have been. So just disappointing for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think the biggest thing that I took away from both these games was it wasn't a 60-minute effort for any of these games. Friday night, they did not start off well at all. They started to get it going in the middle of the game, but then it was kind of too late. Once they pulled the goalie and UNH found those two empty netter goals, it was sort of the end for UConn in that game. And then Saturday, I thought they started off the game really well, but then that second period was just a complete disaster. And then it was sort of a similar story to what's been a lot of these games is they couldn't finish some opportunities they had in the third period, and then UNH found a way to win that game in overtime. So I guess I agree with you, it was frustration, but I just was the most disappointing thing to me about the whole series was how there wasn't a 60-minute effort in any of those games. And that's a team that against UNH that I think is much better than people give them credit for, but you still got to play better than you did last weekend. And that just didn't happen.
Especially given what was on the line for us. I mean, we were still top 16 in pairwise going into that weekend. Like, we controlled our own destiny, which I don't think we, you know, do any longer. So
11% chance to get an at-large bid in the national tournament from what I last checked.
Oh yeah, that's brutal. Yeah, with everything on the line, that's what makes it so frustrating. I agree.
Yeah, I thought I was hoping for a split. That was my hope for the series. I didn't think, like I told you last episode, I didn't think they were going to win all three of these games. I thought a lot of people were sort of taking UNH for granted as well. And honestly, just a little thoughts on UNH. They remind me a lot of that 2019-2020 UConn team, where they're sort of a younger team, but once they figured it out, they went on a second half sort of surge. And that's exactly what this UNH team's doing. They're sort of a younger team, but they're starting to figure out, and now they're going on that second half surge. And obviously, we didn't know what happened with that 2019-2020 UConn team because that season got canceled. But I feel like UNH is sort of in a similar situation with that team. I don't know if you felt the same way or not about them.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's the 2019-20 team. It's literally – it's been every UConn team except for this year. We always finish strong. We always hit our stride at the end of the year. And, like, yeah, sometimes it's too little too late. Last year was a fantastic run, but – we're always playing our best hockey. This is the only UConn, at least Hockey East era team I can ever remember that we played better in October than we did February. So what a shame too, because given that hot start, we actually did have the legitimate chance for an at-large bid. And that's, like you said, all but gone, you know, practically 10%. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's what Mike Cavanaugh teams always do. That's why this one's so puzzling.
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing, like I said, let's just talk about just the offense, because that was sort of what was lacking for me in both these games. It felt like it was very inconsistent. Let's start for the second game. That's where I sort of noticed it more. They were getting shots on net, but they weren't really getting secondhand scoring opportunities from it. It felt like they were just more just shooting at the net and then sort of breaking – UNH would break the puck out. And it was more of just like they got a lot of zone time, but they weren't really shooting it a lot. Even though I think they had like 9 or 10 shots in that period. And that was sort of my biggest frustration was they weren't getting the chances that they deserved. And then in that third period, they were, but they weren't finishing them. And I feel like the inconsistency with this offense is something that's starting to be a little bit frustrating for me.
Yeah. And, you know, I was up there for that second game, Mark, and I drove up and, you know, yeah, the first period they did play great. The second period, like you said, it was god awful. And then like the third, I mean, you know, they came back a little bit. But like you said, with the offense, one thing I found with the offense in particular was I just didn't think they were getting enough shots past the initial defenseman. Like, you got to get, like, the RD have to at least, you know, make the first guy miss. UNH was blocking everything from the point. And you got to at least find a way to get that first shot through. Because then if it gets on goal, hey, deflection, rebound, whatever. But, like, the first shot wasn't getting through. Like you said, it was just – it was, and if it did, it was one and done. It was just and you got to give UNH credit too. I mean, they're just – you know, I did walk away. It took me a couple sleeps to kind of get over it. But I did walk away thinking, I'm like, you know – which I knew to an extent beforehand, they're a hell of a lot better than the record. That UNH – much like us, only the opposite way around. They are not the same team they were in October, November. And there's, I don't think any doubt in my mind. I think they're going to upset somebody in the Hockey East tournament because they're a lower seed. I think they're going to win that first like play-in game or whatever. It'll be interesting to see where they you know, they finish out.
I think it's against BC, if I'm not mistaken, if things would end the way they are today.
Yeah, and I mean, BC's playing better, too, than they were in the beginning of the year. But, I mean, I feel like if they get to that second round, I would not want to be one of those top, like, four seeds that has to face UNH because they're you're not getting what you think you're getting.
Exactly. And another thing that I noticed was UConn had a lot of success against Northeastern a couple weeks ago by getting those dirty, greasy goals. And it felt like in the Saturday game, that was the complete opposite. The two goals that were scored by Harrison Reese and Justin Pearson were sort of skill goals, but I felt like they weren't crashing the net that well and they weren't trying to get those greasy goals. Is that something that you noticed as well? Because I feel like that led, getting those type of goals is what led UConn to some success this year. And I feel like they were struggling to get those type of goals in that game on Saturday specifically and Friday as well.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what you have to do, like to get those highlight reel ones, those pretty ones. Like, yeah, those are like
the
great.
Reese goal was very nice, and the Pearson one was yeah, good as well.
Totally agree. But like you said, your bread and butter is getting those ugly ones. You know, like that's what wins games because those pretty ones aren't always going to be there. Those are, you know, like those are flashes of brilliance or defensive lapses on the other team. Like you got to rely on getting to the net, getting pucks in, you know, pucks through, like I said, past that first D-man. And like you, I think you alluded to it earlier, just not enough sustained like zone time. And if there was, because there certainly was during points of the first period, they'd be in the zone for 2 minutes. They'd be lucky if they got one shot on goal. It's just like they weren't attacking enough. And I also think, too, we should mention, you know, I don't think you can just understate the loss of Amonte. Like, you know, like Amonte.
Oh, yeah.
He's been so huge for us this year. And I don't know that like a lot of these. I know that extra skater, that extra forward has kind of been rotated between Black and Tattle and Carpenter.
It seems like Tattle's starting to become the guy from what yeah. I've been, at least from the latest lineup charts that yeah. I've been seeing.
But like, you know, even if they do have potential, they haven't seen the ice enough, any of them, to really be that true difference maker. So that I think that fourth line has really kind of hurt us. I don't think we've had like the same. You know, in years past, we, you know, Cav's always been proud. He's preached that we could just roll four lines and everything. And, you know, I'd be interested to see what the ice time was because I don't know that we could do that this year anymore. Like that, you know, and like you said, Tattle, I think, has been given because I think he was playing third line on that Saturday game after Amonte was out. So he's definitely the one. And you see it, too, because he's got speed. He takes stupid penalties sometimes. But
oh, the one against Northeastern was absolutely tough. And I felt bad because he was having a great game up to that point.
So. Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, and then, I don't know, like, this is the time of year, right, where, like, your upperclassmen and your best players have to be your best players. Like I want to see, I say it every week, I want to see Torberg, like, do something. Like, yeah. You know, like, you're an upperclassman, you're an NHL draft pick, you're, most nights, I'd say 90% of the time, he's the fastest kid on the ice. Like, just take over it and bury it and, you know, like, I don't know, like, I think Wood's a freshman, and he's been playing phenomenal, but it might be a little bit much to ask for him. But what about these other, you know, upperclassmen where, like, this might be their last go-around? You know, like, Amonte, he left it all on the ice. That's probably why he, you know, separated his shoulder again, you know, for the umpteenth time. And, you know, like, that's just what I want to see. Like, where was yeah. that?
Where's Pearson Andrew was showing Lucas? Up that weekend, I will say that.
Yeah, where's Andrew Lucas, you know, that we saw in the beginning of the year when he was, you know, dangling around everyone and looked like he had the puck on a string? Like, you see flashes, but, like, it's not constant. Like, I just – I wish those kids would take over. I think we're relying a little bit too much on, you know, Wood and Salaminen and, you know, a couple kids that might not be ready for that spotlight. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, but I feel like you win and lose games with your best players. And unfortunately, UNH's best player showed up in that series, and some of UConn's didn't. Like, Samu, I think he's been great this year, but he had a few chances where he could have buried it, and he just didn't. And that's the way hockey goes sometimes. It's a game of inches. And I feel like some of UConn's players, best players, unfortunately, just weren't showing up in that series. And that's when you have to rely on some of your depth. And unfortunately, like you said, some of that depth might not be ready yet because they're just so young in college hockey.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, your best player's got to shine, but I'm not going to pin it on freshmen, even if their freshmen might be our best players. Like, it's got to be those upper, because at the end of the day, they're going to have another go around. Samu's going to be playing on this team next year. Wood, God willing, is going to be on this team next year, you know. So it's like, there's a few players on, this is your last go around. The grad transfers, like, and Pearson's been playing pretty well. I can't get on him, but, you know, yeah. It's like, leave it out there. This might be your last shot at college hockey. You might not be in a UConn uniform next year. Like,
yeah. And guys like Bradley and Capone, like, they've had flashes, but they've shown this year, then this could be their last go-around. Who knows if they sign after the end of this year. So, like you said, you never know. And then another thing that sort of bothered me was just the defense, I felt like, got lazy at times. And that third period was great. It was probably one of the most entertaining periods of hockey on Saturday's game. But a big reason for that was just the defense for both those teams was just so, like, there was just no defense. It was back and forth. Entertaining to watch, but if you're UConn, you sort of want to clean that up a little bit and not give UNH those odd man rushes that I felt like happened a little too much in both of the games, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, even with the defense, too, like, I agree. And
offensively, I thought they did well, but defensively, I think they were not as consistent as I would have liked them to be.
You know who I expected a lot more, speaking of, from this year, is Canal. Like, he's one where I'm like, you know, he came back for that COVID grad year or whatever, and, like, you know, people weren't really, and I thought that was going to be a huge thing, and maybe early in the year was, but there's times, I just feel like we have a lot of, like, offensive defensemen, but not a bunch that are going to, like, bully people on our own end and get them out of there. You know, it's like, Spetz, he just, sometimes I swear, like, he skates in quicksand, he's not the fastest guy, like, Canal, I feel like, has almost regressed since what we've seen, like, either early in the year or last year. Last year, I thought he was phenomenal on a run to, like, you know, the Garden and stuff. And, you know, Lucas, like I said, he started out on fire, and now he's kind of cooled down. He's come back down a little bit to earth. And, I mean, Messinio, I mean, he's a freshman. So, again, you know, and at this point in the year, that shouldn't be an excuse. But, you know, I see flashes with Messinio. I think the future is bright for him. You know, Flynn, I thought he's almost regret. There's a lot of guys. I can't say that they're better at this point in the year than they were either last year or the beginning of this season. And that, you can't have that.
Yeah, I still think John Spetz is playing great in the PK. And I think the PK was very good in this, both in this series. So you got to give him credit for that. And I still like the way Harrison Reese has been playing this year. I think he's gotten better.
Reese has been better, yes.
And then I think Canal's been fine. Obviously, I don't expect him to score like 5 goals a series, but I think defensively he makes up for that. And I think that leadership is sort of very important for this team because they're so young, and I feel like Canal's been a good leader for UConn. So I've liked his game so far this year. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I'll agree to disagree on Roman. I expect more from him, not necessarily offensively, but even defensively. I don't know. I agree with what you said. The PK has been good with Spetz, and Harrison has been one of the few bright spots. But for right now, I'm going to agree to disagree on Roman.
So the one thing I do want to ask you about is the goaltending. We saw Turnis on Friday night, and we saw Sergeyev on Saturday night. And to be honest, I thought Sergeyev played another fantastic game, really kept UConn in it. It could have been a regulation loss if he didn't make that incredible save at the end of the game. At some point, I feel like Cav has got to just roll with one guy heading into the playoffs. I feel like now is sort of the time to do it. And I feel bad because I don't think Turnis has done anything to lose the starting goalie job, but I just feel like Sergeyev has just been sort of there's a higher ceiling with him that I think you kind of need to start to roll with him. I'm interested to see how they go with the goalies this weekend. My guess is Turnis gets the Anchorage start, and then Sergeyev gets the UNH game. And then when the BC series comes around in a couple weeks, Sergeyev will get both those games, and he'll get ready for the playoffs. That's just my prediction. I don't know anything, but what's your thoughts on the goaltending this weekend? Because I don't think it was the issue at all. I actually thought it was one of the few positives of the series.
I think your last point is the best. Goaltending is so far from our problem right now. Like, I don't care if they put Matt Pasquale in net like this weekend. I honestly don't. Like, it is the forwards and the D need to get their butt into high gear. Like, it's that freaking simple. I think they both, I agree. I think it's going to be Turnis against Anchorage, and I think it's going to be Sergeyev against UNH. I'm not sold that Cav is going to double up against BC, but we'll see. But yeah, I just, you know, when things were going great in the beginning, this is a fun conversation to have. Like, oh, who do you think is better? They've both been really good. But now I'm like so depressed with this downturn of the season. I'm like, I don't care. They've both been good. Neither one of them are a problem. In fact, they've been two of the brightest spots on our team because goaltending was our biggest question mark coming into this year. And they've both been phenomenal for freshmen as far as I'm concerned. I do agree. Sergey's been a little better. I'd give him the nod if I were the coach. But like I said, it's not even top 10 concerns for me for this team right now.
Yeah, we'll see how they step up. Like you said, those forwards and defensemen, I think the week off was actually perfect. I think it's good just to take a break, forget about hockey for a little bit. Hopefully those guys had some fun this past weekend, and now they can sort of focus on the home stretch of the season, and maybe that's a good thing for the team.
Yeah, and hopefully they could stew about that loss and that god-awful performance they put up in Durham, because that was an absolute stinker of a weekend.
I thought Friday's was terrible. Saturday's was a little bit better, but overtime was so disappointing because UConn dominated, and then I think it was Percival, like, try to risk it all to get that rebound goal, and then it just led to an odd man rush and UNH burying it.
But Saturday shouldn't have even been close. Like, that's my problem. Like, I drove up with Mark to that game, and I said, you know what? Last night sucked. We're talking about Friday night's game.
Yeah.
I said, you know what the one bright spot is? I said, there's no freaking way they're losing tonight. I said, Cav's gonna have these. They're going to be pissed they lost last night. Like, he's going to kick them in the butt, and they're going to come out. They did. Like, yeah, they had a good first period, but it was uneventful. Like, it wasn't fantastic.
They got the goal, though, which I was like, all right, at least they can build off that.
Yeah, like, they got the early lead and everything disappeared in the second. UNH just overwhelmed. The UNH's second period is what our, like, first should have looked like. It was suffocating. Yeah. And then, you know, like, yeah, the third period is interesting as hell. And OT, don't even get me started. I freaking knew. We were sitting not pretty close to the UNH student section. UNH didn't touch the puck until they scored that goal. It was like 3 minutes of like UConn possession, which might have been the story of the weekend, right? Meaningless possession. And then sure enough, I knew the second I said, you watch, because we were dominating overtime. And I said to Mark, I said, you watch, as soon as they get this puck, if we don't score, they're going to bury it. And sure enough, I think it was the first time they touched it all OT and they buried it. So,
yeah. Definitely a weekend to forget. Hopefully the players will forget it as well. And we have two fun games to look forward to and a chance to sort of get some revenge against UNH on Saturday. But let's start off with the Thursday game, as UConn has a non-conference game against Alaska Anchorage. I'm assuming most people don't know anything about them, so I did some research before this podcast. They are currently 4-16-0 this year, but they've got some impressive wins under their belt. They swept UMass Lowell in December, and they did beat Western Michigan to start off the year, so they have been capable of pulling off an upset. But this is a game that UConn has to win, because if they don't win, any pairwise hopes they have are completely down the toilet, if there is any. So what's your thoughts on this game, and are you going to be able to go? Because I know you're talking about that.
Yeah, it's looking dimmer and dimmer in terms of getting in there. I'm not giving up, and neither is Mark. But yeah, in terms of the game, I mean, Anchorage, like you said, they started off the year with they split against Western Michigan, right?
They beat them.
And Western Michigan is sixth in the country right now in pairwise, so that was pretty good. They completely killed Lowell's hopes. But Lowell was high flying until Anchorage came in there and swept them. So, and then Maine swept them too. So another Hockey East connection. But yeah, I mean, they're a team, especially coming off of, like you said, the extra bye week. So they had an extra week of rest, extra week of preparation. At the end of the day, they're a 4-16 team. I don't even care about pairwise anymore. They should go out and utterly dominate Alaska Anchorage. Them boys had to fly all the way from Anchorage, Alaska.
Their road trip is pretty brutal. I don't know if you had the chance to see it. I think they played three games in like 4 days or whatever.
Yep, but we're at the beginning of it, so it doesn't really affect – it's not going to affect them against us at least. So, yeah, I mean, it's it's a game that they should absolutely dominate. They really need to. Like, they need to get their mojo back, their swagger, and then hopefully they get that confidence, that juice flowing, and then they take it out against UNH on Saturday, because that's the important one. I've all but given up hope for pairwise. I just want a good seed in Hockey East, and, you know, maybe we get back to the Garden. I don't know.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about that later in the podcast, but I have similar thoughts to you on that. Just some top players to look out for Anchorage: Ben Almquist. He's their leading points getter. He has 15 points in 20 games. And who knows who will start for goalie, because they have four goalies and they've all played a lot of minutes. If I had to guess, their number one guy has been Hendricks. Maximilian Hellickson, what a name. He's had, like, it seems like he might be the guy, or Nolan Kent. Those are the two guys that have played a lot of minutes according to their stat sheet. So look out for those two. They'll probably be the ones in net. But yeah, just a game that they have to win. And I'm looking forward to seeing if they can do that or not. It's always fun seeing a team that you never get the chance to see play at all, and that's what it's going to be like for the last Anchorage. But
don't even get me started. So what are your thoughts on the whole student-only game? What do you think about it?
So selfishly, I don't like it because I want to go to the game. So that's my opinion. But I do think it's kind of a unique idea to try to get new fans to become UConn fans, which I do think is a positive thing. I guess my only thing is, like, I don't know, maybe there's a better way they can get newer fans to this game. But I don't know, I think this is going to be interesting. It said they sold out, so it should be a pretty decent crowd on Thursday. I'm interested to see how many of those kids actually show up or not. But I'm excited to see what it looks like. But selfishly, though, I don't like it because I want to go to these games, and it sucks that I can't go, because I'm like you, I like to see as many college hockey teams as I can, and Alaska Anchorage is never coming back to UConn, so there's no chance I'm ever going to see them in person for a while.
That's just it. Like, I got dragged on Twitter early in the season for saying this, and I stand by it 100%. Like, I would 10 times rather the student-only game be against, like, Boston College than Alaska Anchorage. Like, they're a team that does not come out east every year. Like, and if they do, they certainly don't always hit UConn. And it's like, I don't know, I love the rivalry, you know, that we have with some of the hockey schools and stuff, but it's,
I don't think it was the BC game because it's senior day and they want their families to show up. So that's why it's not that one.
No, I know. But, like, at the same time, pick any hockey team.
They should have done UNH. That would have been a good one.
Yeah, right? At least I could see them again next year. And looking at it from the students' perspective, at least they know who the hell UNH is. These kids, I don't know who the Alaska Anchorage is. I guarantee out of the 2,600 that are going to be in there, maybe four of them know their nickname is the Seawolves. Like, give me a break. So it's like, I don't hate the idea of a student-only game, but, like, out of all the opponents this year on our schedule, you pick the one that has never come to Hartford, that is, or Connecticut, I should say now, and is likely never going to come again. Like, that's just such a kick in the sack to, like, because especially when this whole arena is virtually all season ticket holders, we're the ones who would like to see, like, a team, like, come through that have – give them Union. Give them – hello, Ohio.
If it was a bigger – if they had the whole schedule, it definitely would have been, like, Union, like, one of those non-conference games. I can't fault them for that. I think it's good that they're trying something different, but – I don't know if this is going to be, like – I don't know if this is a great idea, though. That's my only thing. I'm, like, sort of, like – maybe this is just me, but I don't think the student-only game is the best idea to get new fans. If the way you want to get new fans is, unfortunately, you've got to be a really good team that makes national tournaments, and that's how you're going to get new fans to come to games.
And you know what? I have defended the size and the capacity of this arena endlessly since it was announced, going back years. And, like, but let's be honest. If this were 1,000 seats more, there wouldn't be a student-only game. It's because if you look at the size of our student section, when you factor in the band, it is kind of laughable. I mean, what do they fit? Like, I don't care what they say. There's no more than, like, a couple hundred kids.
And that's standing on room where you can't really see unless you're in the front of the part of that whole section.
So if the arena is a little bit bigger, which, again, no one has been defended Toscano Family Ice Farm more than this guy on Twitter in regards to its size. But, like, if it's a little bigger, you don't need a student-only game. There's no point for it. So,
yeah. I do want to ask you one more question about this game is, what's your thoughts on UConn's non-conference opponents in the last few years? Because it's something that I don't think it's talked about enough, how why are we playing a game against Alaska Anchorage? Because that game does nothing for UConn whatsoever. It actually hurts UConn if they lose this game more than helps them out. And I would like to see them play more like established Division I teams in the ECAC or Atlantic Hockey, or try to get an NCHC team, like one of those home-and-homes. I just feel like they sort of play either the same non-conference teams or play these lower-tier, newly Division I teams. And I don't know, I wish they played better non-conference games. And I felt like this year was much better, getting Cornell at Madison Square Garden and obviously having Union as well. But I just feel like this late in the season, playing a non-conference game is sort of like, I don't know why we're doing this.
You don't want to get me started on non-conference opponents. That is all Mark Zeroli and I pretty much like talk about. Like, I literally, to me, it's not even from like an advantage in terms of like who's going to help you in pairwise type thing. It is literally just, we play the same freaking teams every single year. How many years have we played like RPI, Brown, Ohio State, like each of those teams, Union, like they've made like several trips to Hartford. It's like, even, okay, I get it. With our athletics budget being so far in, like, you know, the red, we can't afford flights to Alaska every year. I get it. I'm not being unreasonable. But if you look at ECAC alone, which is a Northeast league, it is all like, you know, New York, you know, New England,
Connecticut,
like in New Jersey, it is a Northeast league. In terms of our hockey's tenure, we have never played Clarkson. We have, we've played Harvard once on the road. They didn't return the trip. I don't think Cornell.
And there's no fans for that game too. I was going to go to that one and they canceled. They didn't allow fans, which I was so disappointed about, because I was looking forward to that game.
Yep. We've played Dartmouth in their tournament up there. They've never come to Hartford. We've played, like I said, RPI. I don't know if Cav is like best buddies with the coach at RPI, but they schedule each other every other year.
Colgate came to Hartford one year.
Yep, Colgate came. I think they've come a couple times. I'm there, maybe just once.
I think it's twice. I know they came last year.
Then Yale and Quinnipiac has pretty much just been CTIs. I think we might have played Quinnipiac a couple times outside of that, but like several. Give me Clarkson. Clarkson's a damn good hockey program. They're top, you know, 20 every year in college hockey. But Harvard, Dartmouth, Princeton. Princeton's in New Jersey. We've never played Princeton.
I'd love to go to Hobie Baker. That's one on my bucket list.
I know, right? I would too. And it's like, you know, in like the few ones that we have, like I said, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard, they didn't return the trip. So it's like, it's very, then you look
at St. Lawrence would be cool too. That's another one.
Yeah. Even looking at Atlantic Hockey, right? Like, we played AIC a few years in a row now. Like, we've always played Army. We played RIT a few years. And I get it. We were in Atlantic Hockey for a while, so I'm talking about hockey.
I'm
there.
Shocked that UConn's never scheduled a series with Holy Cross. It's so easy to do that one.
Canisius, Niagara, Mercyhurst. Just give
Bentley.
Me something different. Bentley, like, and then in terms of the Big Ten, you know, like I said, you know how I feel about Ohio State. God knows we have this.
I like Ohio State. The game, those series.
Like, schedule Michigan State. Like, you know, they got a lot of history. Ryan Miller and all that. You know, like,
Wisconsin, they could do them. They've been struggling. Yeah.
Wisconsin, Penn State would be so much fun to go see Pagula Ice Arena. We played them, I think, our first year in, like,
I think that might have been the first Pagula Ice game. Might have been against UConn. I don't know if that's 100% true or not.
We definitely played them. I want to say it was our Cavs first year or last year in Atlantic Hockey. I think we played them. So, like, but, like, get that going. It's a five-hour drive. They're right in Pennsylvania. Like, we played Minnesota at Mariucci one time. I think it was a holiday tournament.
They're never going to come to Hartford unless
we win. Well, not unless we ever make the NCAA tournament. That's what I said, talking about, because I told you, Matt, I can go on for days about
non-conference. Yeah.
Look at UMass. The last 2 years, they have opened up against Minnesota State, and I think it was Denver this year.
Like, yeah.
You want to know why? Because they won a national championship. And all of a sudden, you know, that you get the big boys making the phone calls to you. Hey, we'd like to come out there and you know, and test ourselves in the road. North Dakota, I think, has come to like Providence and stuff like that. Like, you win a national championship, you regularly make, you know, the tournament Frozen Fours. Those big boys will call you. You don't need to call them. But unfortunately, that has not been the case.
Yeah, I understand that, but I at least feel like they could get some of those, like, ECAC or Atlantic Hockey teams, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And the one NCHC team, which I don't, I don't understand why UConn hasn't done it, is Omaha. Omaha is legit UConn NCHC edition. That would be a good one to do. I feel like Colorado College would be a good one to do. Their program.
Colorado College did it in Bridgeport one year.
I don't remember that one. That was a long time ago. I probably don't remember that one. Or maybe
Miami's
Arizona State.
The only one that's come out.
Arizona State. I know UConn played them a few years ago, but they're sort of a with the new arena. That's a program that would be cool to see them play. Western Michigan, maybe. So there's a few ones out there that I feel like UConn could do. And I feel like they're just not doing them. They're sort of repeating, like, the ones that bother me are the lower tiered, like, Alaska Anchorage. Like, why are we doing Alaska Anchorage? Like, that makes no sense to me.
At least
we couldn't get Fairbanks, who's actually, like, in the, pairwise to potentially get in if they, like, went out the rest of their schedule.
Let me tell you, if it's a freaking student only game again, though, what the hell is the point? Like, you know, just.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you give them one of the RPI or Brown games, you know?
Exactly. I don't mind Brown because that's an easy trip. So those are the ones I don't mind. But, yeah, no, I definitely think – hopefully they improve their non-conference schedule next year. I'm curious who they will do because I feel like all those, like, home and homes are sort of over. I think they probably have to go to Union next year. And then I'll be interested to see if they have to go to Alaska Anchorage or not. I feel like that's sort of a one-way trip, though, if I had to be honest with you.
I don't think they will. I don't think – I think Mark – asked Tyler Helton. I don't think they're returning it. And I think part of it too is because I think they're independent. Because I think
they are independent.
Like
they were in the WCHA and then the WCHA like folded and then basically those actually Alaska Anchorage basically like disavowed their hockey program and then they sort of started
Alaska,
back up.
Yeah. And then Huntsville was the other one too. They like basically kicked out the Alaska schools in Huntsville.
And then they shut down their hockey program. Yeah,
they're basically trying to get their programs back. So if you look at Anchorage's schedule, I think they played some non-D1 teams. They played UNLV. They played.
Yeah, no, they have. They have. They
Liberty,
played,
Simon Fraser. I think that's a Canadian university. I don't even know.
Yeah, they have. They have a ton of games against Alaska, LIU. They did play against Air Force and Arizona State and Northern Michigan. So they do have some D1 games under their belt. But yeah, no, at least I'm going to be looking forward to watching this one on a stream. I think it should be a lot of fun. And obviously UConn has UNH again on Saturday. We don't really need to prepare too much for this game just because we already sort of are preview much of this game since we already know what UNH is like. But I guess players to look out for, Cy LeClaire, he was someone that stood out to me. And then we should see what their goalie situation is going to be. I gotta guess they start Tyler Muzelek. I think that's how you say his last name. I thought he was the better goalie in the series for UNH. He really made some key saves to keep UNH in that Saturday game. I know Sergey got a lot of love because of the big save he made, but Tyler Muzelek had a really good game as well, and he was named Hockey's Goaltender of the Week this past week. So I'm assuming he's starting to become the guy for the Wildcats, but I won't be surprised if Fezdell gets that start on Saturday. But definitely a game that you have to win to sort of get yourself back on track in the hockey standings. And, yeah, I think it's going to be a big game for UConn.
Yeah, that Muzelek kid, he was a USNTDP player, which is a big coup for, like,
but he struggled, though, in the early part of the season. I think part of it's because they had to bring him in early so he could go to UNH.
Yeah.
He's starting to find his footing a little bit, it seems like.
Yeah, no, I think he's a Panthers pick, too. Like, he, you know, to play in the NTDP, that's cream of the crop. So that was a – he's definitely, like, their surrogate. Like, he's their goalie.
Yeah.
He's got a ton of potential.
Because they've had what's that guy's name, Robertson, for like years before the season.
he was a big. I think he was a Sharks pick. I wonder if he's playing in the AHL. The other kid they played Friday night, he was a big boy. He's 6'6" or something like that. The Fezenden, is that who it was?
Yeah, Fezenden. I don't know how to say it. I'll butcher that a little bit, so it's fine.
he was a big boy, but UConn didn't do anything on Friday. Whereas Muzelek, he had to put up, much bigger saves. But still, he had some nice saves or whatever, but I still don't think UConn did enough.
I agree with you on that. I still think he had a good game, though, and he's definitely I feel like he'd probably get the start on Saturday, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I would think so, too. I don't know what their split has looked like, though. So.
Well, they only have one game next weekend, so that's why I'm sort of interested to see how it works out, because they only come to UConn next weekend. That's the only game of the week. But some other players that stood out for me for UNH was I really liked Jake Dunlap. He was a really good player. I liked Liam Devlin a lot. Chase Stevenson. And then obviously this defenseman, he's a freshman. His name's Damian Carfagna. He got the OT winner. He was really impressive as well. So a lot of young, good players on this UNH team. I'm interested to see how they sort of build off that, because I always think there's a lot of questions if Souza was going to keep his job after this season. I think the way they're playing now, he probably will be their coach next year, and interesting to see how they build off of this sort of stretch they've had in the second half for next season.
Yeah, I agree. I also liked Black's older brother, who
Ryan Black. He was a transfer from Babson College, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, he was like probably the best player at D3 or D2 or whatever it was, and like ended up transferring to UNH. And yeah, he impressed. I think wasn't he the one who scored the empty netter, like diving like
all? Yeah, I think so on Friday. Yeah,
but that was the other thing too. It's like, why are they diving for the empty netter and you're not diving to block it? Like, they have virtually nothing to play for. Like, give me a freaking break. I don't know. I'm very heated about this.
Yeah. Now let's take a look where UConn stands in the pairwise. So they're currently 20th in pairwise. I know you said that's meaningless, but they still technically have 11% chance to get out. I think it depends on if they make the Hokies tournament or how they do in the Hokies tournament or not. I still think they're capable of making the Garden, though. I think that was my expectation for the beginning of this year, and I still stand by that. But UConn did have the week off last weekend, and now they're in fifth place. So if the playoffs would start today, they would have to head up to UMass Lowell for that quarterfinal game. So I think that's big because they're sort of – I don't think they're going to win the regular season championship, but I do think they're definitely capable of getting a home ice game in the quarterfinals, and they're sort of fighting with Lowell and Providence for that home ice game. So I'm interested to see how that works out, and if UConn continues to struggle, they might not get a quarterfinal game. They might have to play in that opening round game, which they will host at Toscano, but I feel like if you're UConn, you want to get that quarterfinal game, get it at home ice, because all you got to do is just win that game and you're in the Garden. So that's where they're playing for right now. So interested to see how that works out. Lowell has a really tough schedule, though, or compared to UConn, where they have a more easier schedule. So I think UConn, if they take care of business against UNH and they split against BC, I think they should be able to get a home ice game in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, so a couple things here. So one, I think we're virtually, certainly not mathematically, I think we're virtually locked into that 4-5 matchup. You know, we're 3 points ahead of Providence, but for the first time all year, I could actually say we have a game in hand on someone in Hokies. We have a game in hand on Providence.
Yeah.
So, and then BC has a game in hand on us, but they're also, I think they're 8 points behind us, so they would have to sweep us to leapfrog us. So I think it's pretty much just a matter of, I think it's going to be UConn-Lowell. I think it's just going to be a matter of who has home ice. I think that's virtually what it's going to come down. I'd be not shocked, but I would be surprised if it was something else.
I think UConn should get it based on Lowell's schedule. I think they play Merrimack and Northeastern, who are fighting to win that regular season title. So I don't think they're going to – I think that most they win two of those games.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, this weekend, look at Merrimack sweeping BU. I mean, it just goes to show you, like, hey – you know, for as down as we've been for, you know, this second half, if they can find a way to bring back the team we saw in October, November, Hockey East is wide open. I refuse to believe in Northeastern because they're literally just Devin Levi and like the Island of Misfit Toys. Aiden McDonough scores the goals and then Devin Levi stops everything. The rest of them, I swear they wouldn't beat Mercyhurst in a 7-game series. BU, I mean, they're as good as anyone, but that Merrimack sweep kind of opened up some eyes, and they've been dropping a little bit in pairwise too. I mean, Hockey East is looking legitimate.
There's a chance where the team that wins the regular season championship might not be in the top 16 in pairwise.
Yeah, we could legitimately be a one big league this year, which if you told me 3 months ago, I would have laughed. I'm like, hey, we're looking at like 5 or 6. So Hockey East has just kind of been, you know, devouring itself, unfortunately. It's been like cannibalistic. Merrimack has been on a downward slide, but then they just came back with the BU sweep. Lowell, I still think, especially in Songus, is tough to beat. You know, Providence has been super up and down. BC seems to be coming on a little bit.
Providence, I do not believe in them. They always find a way to lose games, it feels like. That UConn series was just that emphasizes how they always find ways to not get points in games they should.
Yeah. And then in the bottom, I mean, like I said, UNH is in ninth. Say a prayer.
There's only two teams that I think aren't that good, and that's UMass and Vermont. The rest of the Hockey East, I feel like, is anyone's for the taking, honestly. Yeah.
That's what I mean. I after seeing UNH, I still say they're going to upset somebody in Hockey East, and the rest of the league is wide open. So, you know, just get some momentum here these last 2 weeks and see what happens. So
yeah, that's exactly what should happen, and hopefully they can get that home ice series. And you sort of led into my other point, but just outside of Hockey East, Merrimack swept BU, so basically that regular season championship is basically between Northeastern, Merrimack, and Boston University, and that's obviously going to come down in the last weekend. And then obviously Providence and Lowell splits, that gave Lowell the advantage over UConn to get that home ice game for the quarterfinals. And then BC swept UMass, and UMass, I don't know what's been going on with them. They've just kind of been a disaster this year. So that's what's been going on in Hockey East. And then Northeastern won the Bean Pot in a shootout. So I know people are upset about the shootout thing. I don't really think it's that big of a deal, honestly. I think some of these double overtime games are a bit overrated, but that's just my opinion. But congrats to NU on winning that Bean Pot championship. And last time they lost to the Garden was against UConn, so I just felt the need to put that out there.
So, you know, it's funny. We had our group text on Twitter or whatever, and I literally had it, like, ready to go queued up, and then I, like, for some reason, just, I must have fell asleep or something. I disagree on the Bean Pot thing. I love continuous overtime. I think it's the best thing about, like, playoff hockey and its tradition in the Bean Pot. Like, you know, I don't think anyone was going to score Devin Levi, so I think the better team, well, at least the right team won. But how about first time in Bean Pot history, 70 years, that, like, the final was Harvard and Northeastern. There's only four teams. Like, how many possible combinations? And, that, like, to actually have Northeastern and Harvard in the final, it was just unreal. It's legitimately never happened. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of crazy. But, yeah, give me continuous overtime all day. I think there's nothing – the first time ever won on a Butchie overtime challenge that he does on Twitter, I picked – I think it was John Madden to score for Northeastern, and he ended up winning in, like, the Bean Pot or whatever, and I got a shirt from Butchie. So I love continuous overtime. Give me 6 hours of it. Give me quadruple OT. I don't care.
Okay. I have to completely disagree with you on that. I think those double overtime games are the worst. At some point, you've got to end these things, and I feel like the better team never wins. It's always the team with the most will, and that's not hockey. It should be a game on skill. And remember that Tampa-Columbus game that went, like, to six overtimes a few years ago? The fourth overtime was awful. It was, like, terrible hockey. Like, at some point, you just got to find a way to end this game. So here's my hot take. For playoffs, you do 5-on-5 overtime for 20 minutes. If no one scores, then you do 4-on-4 overtime for 20 minutes. And then if no one scores, then you do 3-on-3 overtime for 20 minutes. And if no one can score in three periods, then you do a shootout. And I know people get upset about that, but at some point, we don't have 8 hours to decide a game. We got to figure this out. It's my one hot take I have in hockey, but I am not a fan of triple overtime games. I feel like they're never good. It's just a team who's not as tired finds a way to score.
Now,
or it's off like a weird bounce. It's never off like a skill thing or anything. It's always just like it bounced off a guy and went in.
Now, all right. So let me ask you this, then, Matt. Have you been in attendance in person for a multiple overtime playoff hockey game before?
I have. In 2019 Hockey East semifinals, BU and Northeastern played, and I think Northeastern won that game in double overtime. So that was the only one I remember being in attendance for that.
Because I think it's different when you're really rooting for one of the teams.
I was, like, a neutral fan, but yeah, no.
Yeah, I've been to several for, like, the Hartford Wolfpack through the years and everything, and, like, they're absolutely crushing to lose and just euphoric to win. There's just something different. Like, again, we can agree to disagree, but, like, I also feel very strongly about that. And again, having been into, like, several, like, it just, you hold your breath every show. And I agree with you. Like, the hockey does go downhill, and it usually ends on some lame thing. It becomes a battle of attrition. But when you're a fan in the stands, and it's indescribable. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, for sure. The one thing is, I remember that BU Northeastern game being the first game of the game, and I'm like, we might not get the second game between UMass and BC after that if this overtime won't end. So I remember thinking that, but it did end in the second overtime. I forgot who scored that goal. I think it might have been Tyler Madden, the guy you mentioned. So that's kind of funny. But no, it was great talking with you, Kevin. Should be a fun weekend. Excited to have you back on next weekend to preview BC. It's crazy to think that after this weekend, the final weekend of the regular season is upon us before playoffs. It's, I think, 44 days until the Frozen Four. So the season is closing on us fast, unfortunately, which is a bit disappointing. But really looking forward to this weekend. Like I said, hopefully UConn had some fun during their bye weekend, and we'll now focus on taking care of business this weekend against Alaska and UNH. So that's my final thoughts. Anything that you want to add before we end it?
Yeah, I hope they didn't have any fun on this bye week. I hope they sulked in their rooms and just watched tape nonstop of that UNH series. And that Mike Cavanaugh gives them a swift kick in the ass, because they better come out. I'm not worried about Anchorage. That would be a massive, like, red flag. Like, some, this season's done if they lose at home to Anchorage. But, like, I want to see that UNH game, and I want them to just take it to UNH, like you said at the beginning, for 60 full minutes. Like, just, you know, balls to the wall. That's what I want to see. So, go UNH.
Yeah. That's definitely our coaching style. So let them loose, have some fun, and then focus. And then you're just like, nope, like, watching tape, we're doing this again, and we're going to figure out a way to win. So I wonder who's the good cop, bad cop is for UConn coaches. I feel like Cav's the good cop, and then Highland's probably the bad cop. That's just my guess.
I don't think either of them are bad cop. I think they're both, like, UCop. I think they're both, like, you know, Cav's like, oh, yeah, we'll get them next time, champ. You know, we'll go have some fun this week. You guys. Like, I killed the few times he shows intensity, I love it. Like, there's usually like a moment or two each season where he loses it a little bit. But yeah, I like that. That's what UConn coaches do, right? I mean, look at Hurley. He's a maniac. You know, you look at, you know, we got Calhoun before then, stuff like,
Gino.
You know, Gino. Yeah. Like, that's how UConn does. It's intense coaches that call stuff out, and, you know, Cav kind of breaks the mold a little bit, so I don't love that about him. But
I think Jim Pender's the same way for baseball, though. So there's a few coaches.
Yeah, he's a little even keel. Yeah.
My favorite Cav moment will always be him banging on the glass after that empty net goal. That was one of the best videos of all time.
That better stay in the intro video for 20 years to come. I don't care if we win the national championship one year. That thing still better be in the intro video.
So that's awesome. Smile that makes the sun